We're taking a look at some news that broke earlier this week. The obesity epidemic has been well publicized in the United States, and a lot of experts blame all of the high sugar, high fat foods that fill our supermarkets.
But a new study from the Stanford University School of Medicine shows our daily caloric intake hasn't changed in the last 22 years. What has changed is the amount of exercise Americans get when they're not at work. This suggests that under-exercising, not overeating, is to blame for the obesity epidemic.
Lead author Dr. Yuri Lademan is with us. He's a professor of medicine at the University of Stanford School of Medicine. Yuri, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you very much. Happy to be with you.
Well, what did your study find out about how much Americans today are exercising?
Let's start with those numbers, and then we can talk about how that relates to some of the other measures that you talked about. In summary, at the beginning of the time period of the study, which was late 80s, early 90s, approximately 10 to 20% of people said that they were getting no leisure time physical activity. And that increased in the latter period, which is around 2009, 2010, up to 45 or 50%. So a really significant increase in what people were reporting.
So that seems pretty remarkable as a drop. How would you put it into context?
I think there are a couple of caveats. A lot of people have been asking me how reliable these measures are. It's different to measure somebody's weight than to ask them how much they've exercised, and by the way, also how much they've eaten. And all that is true. So one of the first things that we have to point out is that this is based on self-report. So maybe people are reporting things inaccurately. But in general, when people misreport, they tend to underestimate how much they're eating and overestimate how much they're exercising.
Right.
So I don't think that is likely to explain the change that we see in the physical activity report. However, the research methods that were used to ask people the question about physical activity did change over time, and it's possible that that could have affected things somewhat. So with those caveats, your question, how do we put this into context, I think it's quite dramatic, assuming that this does reflect a big shift in what we're doing with our leisure time. It's not good news that so many of us are moving so little when we're not at work.
Well, what would people do before when they got off work? They get off work and they hit the road and start jogging or biking, and now we're just filling our time with something else?
Good question. We didn't parse that out specifically in our study. The respondents were asked about specific activities and how much time they spent on those. And then there are certain energy expenditure values added to that. And yes, it's some of the things that you're talking about, walking, biking. Some people would run, would bike, swim, and so on. And it just seems that the fraction of people doing that to a substantial degree was lower in the more recent survey cycles.
And as far as women go, the story is even more dire when you look at the amounts of exercise especially a certain age group of women seem to be getting now. Can you tell us about that?
Yes, all of these results varied somewhat by sex and by age. Overall, for women, we're closer to the higher levels of inactivity that I mentioned before, so closer to 50%. Now, men, closer to 40%. But we saw some important changes in younger women that make us a little bit concerned, because that was also the group where there were some of the more important increases in obesity and also abdominal obesity.
Why did you look specifically at abdominal obesity?
That's a very important question. There is a lot of research that has looked at weight in general as a function of height, and this is what we use to calculate the body mass index. As people have a higher body mass index, they move from the normal weight to the overweight category and then to the obese category. Much work has shown that once somebody's categorized as obese, they have a higher risk of all kinds of adverse health outcomes, cardiovascular disease, cancer, mortality. But in addition to that, and independent of that, abdominal obesity or fat in the midriff, what people call belly fat, some people have called it beer gut. That condition, independent of people's body mass index, is associated as well with adverse health effects. So we were interested in both the trends in obesity as well as the trends in abdominal obesity. And there were some interesting things. For instance, the fraction of people categorized as overweight by body mass index. For those people in the population, there's a lot of debate as to what the health consequences are. But within that group, we saw that abdominal obesity was increasing. So that's almost a compounding of some of these trends within the usual categories that we tend to look at.
This seems pretty significant, and yet I know that sometimes people exercise and exercise, and they still don't lose weight. That doesn't seem to be the magic key for them. We just had Gretchen Reynolds, the Well blog from the New York Times on, and we were talking a bit about that. So do you think we can really ascribe this more to exercise than to, you know, all the fatty, sugary food on the market?
No, I don't. And I actually welcome the opportunity to make this clarification, because I think some of the coverage of our study may actually be presenting things in a way that is a little bit unbalanced. It's tempting to have catchy phrases such as it's exercise, not calories, or another study may come out, you know, a month from now that says it's calories, not exercise. I think if we just lean back, think about this sensibly, just as common sense, even as non-researchers. But then also, if you take a look at the totality of the research out there, we have to conclude that it's both. It may or may not be a productive argument to ask how much is attributable to one versus the other. I think that's going to be very hard to tease out. And there's no question that both are important. A simplistic way to think about this is that we need to achieve energy balance in order not to add weight as fat, so that you have to have a pretty close match between your energy intake and your energy expenditure in order to maintain weight. Is it useful to say how much of the overall population trend is used to one versus the other, is attributable to one versus the other? Maybe, but I think that's very hard to tease out. So that's the epidemiology. Now, what your question is getting at is, what do you do about it if you're already overweight? And that's a totally different question. Absolutely, it is hard for people to lose weight. We all know that. Many times as people exercise, that also can change their caloric intake. For some people, it helps to modulate their appetite. Other people feel like eating more, so maybe a little bit of chasing your tail. The set points that people's bodies tend to defend are different. Some people just seem to settle out at one level versus another. So I recognize that in terms of the intervention for people who are already overweight, it's a big challenge. It is probably easier for us to think about maintenance of weight in people who are not already overweight. But both of these things require a lot of effort over a lifetime.
If you look at something like First Lady Michelle Obama's recent campaign, Let's Move, which is aimed at cracking down on childhood obesity, is that still the message here? Let's move. Let's get people moving. We don't know how all of these pieces of the puzzle fit together yet, but it's still going to be solid advice for people to exercise more.
Absolutely. I think that's a very important message. Exercise has a big role to play in weight maintenance. In some cases, it's successful at weight reduction, but it also has tremendous benefits beyond that. Even for people who are somewhat overweight, and even if they don't shed those extra pounds with the exercise, we know that being physically active and being physically fit improves the outlook in terms of health, and also other things that are part of quality of life that may not necessarily be health related. So that is a very, very important message. You know, what strikes me is that we can view this as very complicated, because the science is complex, the interactions are complicated, there are many layers to this discussion, and all of these things interact with one another. But on the flip side, we can also see it as relatively simple. It is, in the end, about a balance between caloric intake and exercise. So the message is simple. The implementation is really, really hard. But messages such as move, be active, I think should be put out there, should be heard, and I think that can really make a difference on a population basis.
We're talking right now with Dr. Nuri Lauterbaum from the Stanford University School of Medicine about his new study showing that under-exercising is part of the problem when it comes to the obesity epidemic in the United States.
This is Central Time. I'm Cynthia Schuster.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. We're continuing our conversation now with Dr. Yuri Lauterbaum from the Stanford University School of Medicine. His new study looks at under-exercising and shows that that may be a big part of the obesity epidemic, but at least part of the puzzle here in the United States.
And we're taking your calls, too. What do you think? What do you do to incorporate exercise into your daily life? Or what do you think should or could be done to encourage Americans to exercise more? You can call in and let us know at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Or you can send us an email to talk@wpr.org.
And we're going to go now to our callers. John is with us in Madison. Hi, John.
Hello. I had a point that perhaps people don't have a lot of leisure time to begin with due to a low pay rate in this country and having to work a lot to make ends meet. I mean, I don't have much leisure time to begin with. I try and get exercise in the morning, but it's not always easy. The days that I have to go in early, I have to mess around my schedule a little bit to...
Right. That's a great point, John. I'm glad you brought that up. A lot of people working a lot of hours, people are under financial stress, and they may not feel that they have leisure time or any time where they can fit in anything extra besides just sort of the things you need to do to live. What do you think, Dr. Lauterbaum?
Yes, that is a very, very good point. And I think one of the key things here is to remove any adverse judgments. Let's say, oh, you know, why aren't you exercising? Because for many people, the intent is there, but the time or the facilities or other factors may not be there to allow people to do the physical activity that they'd like to do. So I absolutely sympathize with that. I understand it completely. You know, one way in which our modern lifestyle may be hurting us is that not only may be we may be working long hours, but in the past, many more of us used to exert more energy in work. There were different types of jobs. Much of what we do now is much more sedentary. And people also may have expended more energy getting to work. Now, many of us are driving everywhere and sitting around at work all day. And if you work long hours or if you have other responsibilities, there is little of this leisure time to then devote to physical activity. So all of this gets compounded. So I totally understand what the caller is saying, and that is part of the problem.
And we keep hearing news that grows more and more dire about how bad sitting is for us and the host of health problems that can come along when we sit for hours and hours at a day. Do you think that's, you know, part of this picture here?
It may well be. Here I'm speculating. It's certainly nothing that we measure directly, and it's not something that I have a lot of expertise on. So whether it's the sitting alone or whether it's the absence of getting up and doing other things, I don't know. But it's true that sitting around may have its own problems, whether they're just mechanical in our body or otherwise. But I think part of it is also the trade-off. If we're sitting around a lot, we're not doing other things.
Well, thank you to John for the call. And next we go to Rachel in Milwaukee. Hi, Rachel.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I actually have a question. How much do you know about genetics and how they play a specific role in, you know, how much exercise one person needs versus another? And I'll take my answer off the air.
All right. Thank you, Rachel. And Dr. Lauterbaum?
That's a very, very interesting point. I would say that until now, we have a very limited genetic understanding of how this works at various levels. There are definitely differences among individuals with respect to what seems to be the weight level that their body defends and how much exercise they or energy expenditure they need to maintain that. And in addition, what effect the exercise may have on their cardiovascular or other fitness. We are far, very far from being able to understand this at a discrete genetic level. I will say one thing, though, and that is that there are some relatively extreme syndromes where people are quite obese, but those are few and far between. So the trends that we are seeing in the population at large, I don't think can be explained by genetics alone, because the genetics in the population haven't really changed that much. However, there are some subgroups that are much more susceptible to weight gain under certain conditions. And that's where the confluence of our modern lifestyle may be creating problems, because populations that may have been traditionally doing very well with certain types of diets, certain types of daily activity, all of a sudden things start to change, unfortunately, more towards what we call the Western lifestyle. And all of a sudden, you see these increases in obesity, type 2 diabetes. That's been part of the problem in Western and more industrialized countries, but this is being seen more and more in developing countries, so it's becoming a worldwide issue. So the short answer is we are far from being able to tease out the genetics. Yes, there are some groups that are more susceptible than others, but I don't think it explains all of the trends, so we have to look at the environmental factors.
Okay, thank you, Rachel, and we'll go next to Dan joining us in Green Bay. Hey, Dan.
Yeah, hey. I've noticed a big change in the last 20 years, and I just Googled that the average American watches 34 hours a week of TV, and then you throw the video games and the computer on top of that, and I just don't think people are, I think they have the time, I just think they're prioritizing other priorities.
It's an interesting case there, and also, it occurs to me to ask whether when we're talking about screen time, or we're just talking about screen time in our leisure time, because certainly a lot of us spend a lot of time looking at screens at work, but certainly people are watching screens. They're playing on their devices. What do you think about that and how that might factor in, Doctor?
I think that could certainly be an issue. Again, I'm talking more out of my general knowledge of this area than anything that I've researched, but certainly people have asked me about this and people bring it up. They say our life is much more electronic. We're doing all these things on screens. We're sitting around instead of being outside and doing things. My observation is that has definitely increased, and I think that probably does account for it. So if we put together some of the things that the callers are raising, one, some subgroups in the population may not have that leisure time. Two, the ones who have leisure time are using to spend it in ways other than moving around. All of these things, I think, are adding up to the big picture.
So we've got a piece of this puzzle here. You found out that Americans are exercising far less. It seems that they're eating the same caloric intake. At least that's what they're reporting. So what is the next step to teasing this out?
Well, that is a challenging question. And I think what we have to ask ourselves is, where will our energies be best used? What should we be doing next? And there are various research approaches that people could try to take to try to figure out, is it more the intake problem? Is it more the expenditure problem? But I really think that in terms of the societal priorities, we should try to look at interventional research. What is it really that can make a difference at the individual level and even at the population level? So that's not the type of work that I personally am engaged with, but if I were to set priorities for the field and for the society in general, it's really now at the point where we need to say, we may not have all the answers. We don't know exactly how much is due to one thing or the other. You can argue about some of the magnitudes of the effects, but we have a pretty good idea that intake matters, energy expenditure matters, and we have problems on both ends. So what do we do about it? What do we actually get our kids to be doing? People who are already overweight, what's the best way to treat them? So that's what I would prioritize.
I notice you don't sound like you're scolding people about this. This could be the kind of thing where there was a lot of finger wagging going on, saying, shame on you lazy Americans, get off the couch and start exercising. It seems as though you think that maybe there are some good reasons that we're not exercising, and maybe it's not our fault totally.
Right. So I definitely think that scolding doesn't help. This has to be all taken as a constructive conversation of what we can do. But I do have to say that there are some trends out there that try to take away any personal responsibility, and I don't think that's right either. As with most things, the interactions here are complicated, and it's not all black or white. Is it all the environment? Is it all society? Is none of it under our control? No. On the other hand, is it just that we are fat and lazy and we are gorging? No. It's a combination of things. What ultimately we can control as individuals may be limited, but that's where our personal responsibility comes in. And for some people, it's not that limited. Many people do have a lot of time and they have a lot of choice over their foods. The most vulnerable populations tend to be those for whom the food choices are bad. and their environments are bad. It may not even be safe to be out and walking around. And in those settings, I think they're really much more victims of the environment than they are essentially able to affect things out of free will.
Well, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
We've been speaking with Dr. Yuri Lauterbaum, professor of medicine at the Stanford University School of Medicine.
I'm Cynthia Schuster.
I'm Veronica Rickert. You're listening to Central Time on Wisconsin Public Radio.